Hey everybody, I'm John. I have a special guest with me today. This is a special podcast that I'm doing in the Savage Mobile in Melbourne, Australia, with the one and only Mr. Impaired Grappler, Sava Claridis. What's up, Sava?
How are you?
So, what we're doing today, we got the High Jiu-Jitsu Stories show. And the High Jiu-Jitsu Stories show is there to share the stories within High Jiu-Jitsu and within all of Jiu-Jitsu. The High Jiu-Jitsu Stories show, it's here to just showcase the joys and the benefits and the beauty of Jiu-Jitsu on a personal level. And it's something that me and Brad have been working on, and Brad's been working super hard and putting some awesome episodes in. We've had some beautiful podcasts come up lately. And there's no one better to interview than you, Sava, because you've had an amazing journey throughout Jiu-Jitsu and some very special moments and some big challenges as well. So I'd love to introduce everybody to you and just to have a chat about, you know, how things have been going. So what do you tell us, Sava?
What do I tell you?
Firstly,
go to your mother.
Firstly, how'd you get into Jiu-Jitsu?
A friend of mine in high school, after seeing the Gracies in the, or Hoist Gracie in the UFC, he was like, oh, we should do Jiu-Jitsu. So he found this place that does Japanese Jiu-Jitsu, and there was ninth Dan Kancho. So basically I was doing Jiu-Jitsu for a couple of years there, sort of out of high school into university. I wasn't really that serious about it, because I was concentrating on my schooling at the time. So yeah, then I stopped for a while and then took it up with a friend who had a friend that was doing it in his garage. So there was pretty much just two students that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll just...
Is that Japanese?
Well, technically it was it was more of a freestyle martial arts, sort of jiu-jitsu with kickboxing and that sort of stuff. So we'd do like a jiu-jitsu class and then do like a kickboxing class and sort of bring them together, kind of MMA style. But yeah, I was doing that for like six months. Then I went overseas, and when I came back, they didn't have enough students, so they stopped doing it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so then I stopped for a while, and then...
What level did you get to in that?
I didn't grade or anything.
All right.
Just, yeah. So I didn't do it for long enough, but... it was way different. Like, all that jiu-jitsu that I did was just like, okay, 5 minutes on the ground at the end of class, and they didn't really show us any techniques. It was just like, oh, you break open the guard by digging your elbow into the thigh and that sort of stuff. Which is really annoying when people do that to me now. It's like, come on, man. Do you really bump my legs?
That's not a good way to open the guard. It's a bit brutal. Mm. When you stick the point of the elbow right in the quad, in between.
Yeah, but if you have to hold your legs,
the muscles separate, just right in there.
Yeah, flat. But if you have to hold it, you can take the pain in the fight.
Or something. Yeah, you have to take the pain. Sava, we've just been doing a whole seminar, whole tour with Professor Pedro Sawa. It's just been mind-blowing.
Mm.
So mind-blowing. And the most beautiful thing is just, there's always an ethos behind all of the techniques that he gives. And that's such a beautiful aspect of, you know, a seminar and the experience of learning with Professor. The ethos that he talks about is one of just like playing, and it's so beautiful. And when you're digging your elbows into someone's legs. Here's one thing he says. He says, you know, would you do that to your daughter? If you had to teach your 5-year-old daughter jiu-jitsu, is that a way you'd teach her how to open someone's legs? One, that wouldn't work for her because she can't generate that power, like in it, to hurt somebody. But it's also not nice. Like, you don't want to do that. You'd dissuade her from training. You know? So, yes. So, yeah, so the gym, the way that you were training, that was just a little bit brutal at the time?
A little bit. So they did, you know, judo, jiu-jitsu and Chinese boxing, and they had weapons classes and that sort of stuff as well. So, yeah, they'll add a few strikes in as well and stuff like that. So, but it wasn't brutal. Mm-hmm. I mean, it had a lot more throws. Yeah. So it's like, you know, judo is pretty brutal with the throws, but I was still a teenager, so I was still pretty, you know, pretty strong.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. And then what happened after that?
I don't know, maybe it was a few years later, maybe 2 years later. So I met my instructor, Phil, through work, and I saw the sticker on the back of his car for jiu-jitsu, so, you know, I had that story.
Oh, right.
That conversation with him. I used to do jiu-jitsu, but it's like, it's a completely different thing. It's like, oh, yeah, man, no worries. And it's like, come down. And he never thought I'd come down, but I did. I went down to, to Murat's gym back in the day. Yeah. Back in the old Wakefield place.
What belt was Phil when?
I think he was a purple, I think.
Oh, nice.
Or he might have just gotten it. I can't remember. But yeah, he was purple belt. You know, his brother was there. And then, like, Stephen was there back then, but he was still 16.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was just a, you know, big lanky kid back in the day. But now he's like, he's taking it up seriously in the last, what? Been doing last probably 6 years, I guess, maybe 8 years.
Steven's a monster.
And he's a, yeah,
he looks so big, and you know, he's just, here's the thing, he's really big and he knows how to use his weight. He just knows exactly where to put it, and he sets up these traps. It's really fun. It's so much fun to train with him.
Yeah, I love rolling with him. It's always a fun roll.
He was cooking there, like all the guys. That was the original spot, huh? How was your first class in Nexus? What happened?
I don't really remember. I just loved it. I just knew I loved it. I can't really remember.
Did you roll in the first class?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, you know, I remember we'd, you know, start off the warm-up, front rolls and do all that sort of stuff. So I was trying to remember to do them properly, but I was probably a bit wonky. But, yeah, I knew how to do all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, it sort of showed me few things, and I can't remember what moves it was, but back then, the moves we were learning, some of them were basic, but some were really good advanced moves. So it was, so I did a competition in the early days when I was still white belt. I was not ready, but I thought, fuck it, I'm just gonna jump in,
yeah,
you know, just get the experience. And like, I was a fit triathlete back then, like, started to do Ironmans. Well, maybe half Ironmans at the time, getting into Ironman, but I was really fast and doing, I had a good VO2 max, I did really well on the beep test.
Yeah, because you were doing Ironman. Hey, how many Ironmans have you done?
Three and a half.
Three and a half.
And that half probably, that half saved me.
So we're back. That was a little break that we had. We had a call. So, we're talking about Nexus Greensboro. And the times that were happening there. So when you first started, Phil was a purple belt. Was Roger around?
That wasn't Greensboro. That was Coburg.
All right. That was
Nexus Coburg. Nexus right. Greensboro was when Phil started in Greensboro.
Okay.
I think it was called Nexus Greensboro.
Yeah, yeah. Then, oh, so you started in Coburg.
Started Coburg.
And then you went to Greensboro.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Was Greensboro further from you than Coburg?
It's closer. It was much closer to my home, and kind of on the way home from work, but so was COVID was sort of on the way home. But yeah, I'd stop for a year, like because of my arm injury. After I got my blue belt from Pedro Sauer at the Nexus Coburg,
Wait, how long were you
the
at
new
white belt?
Nexus, the current.
How long were you at white belt?
It's probably like 4 years,
4 years at white belt.
probably. Sort of, it
Awesome.
was like on off. Yeah, there was no tracking of it or anything back then. It was kind of, yeah, I asked Murad if I can go for my blue belt. He's like, oh, how long you been here? It's
All
like, oh,
right.
yeah. And it's like, yeah, you should be right. Like, so I had like, I don't know, 3 or 6 months to learn the test. Basically, I learned and performed it perfectly, the actual sequence of moves. I
Yeah.
was like obsessed. I was watching it in the car all the time. I was
Yeah.
watching it like every spare minute that I had. I was watching that video, the blue belt videos.
Yeah.
And yeah, even Murat told me, oh, I noticed you did it perfectly, sort of thing. Good job, man. That was awesome. And like Phil told me, look, I know we said you can go for your blue, but that doesn't mean guaranteed to get it. You got to put in the hard work. So Phil sort of sat me down and told me, you know, get my ass into gear. So I was sort of, yeah, had to give up a little bit of the triathlon training, yeah, to do the, to learn the blue belt test, pretty much.
Okay. So how much triathlon training were you doing at that time?
Well, I was coaching at least once a week, probably, or actually, I was coaching twice a week. I was doing an indoor cycle class as well as a running class, and occasionally I taught swimming as well. But I was basically there every day, so it was like whether I was coaching or training, or sort of both. Like in the cycling class, I'd be on my bike, so that was sort of part of training. So I was probably training 5 6 days a week.
Wow. And was this
Yeah,
before,
big
like,
rides on the weekends, which were horrific for me. Had ITB issues, so my knee was just killing me after 20 Ks of riding. I was just like, I just had constant knee pain.
and that's just a short ride for cyclists, isn't
That's
it?
the warm up. That's
Yeah,
like,
that's the warm up,
and
yeah.
then like my knee would be in so much pain, and I was actually seeing my therapist, and he was coming to my house twice a week, spending pretty much an hour and a half just on my legs.
Wow.
And it was so freaking painful using his elbows and getting in there like in the ITB.
Yeah.
Now, I realize that's probably not that's not the best way to treat the ITB. You're supposed to loosen it up to up at the hip, apparently. But look, I don't know. But I went through a lot of pain to get to the starting line, and for at least one of them, and it was like, it was probably two of them. But yeah, like,
Are these the triathlons?
yeah, that was the Ironman. So
Or the
there was
Ironman?
1 year I did like
Wow.
a mini triathlon.
Yeah,
I did
well,
like
you have to build up to that.
seven different events.
Yep.
Like,
So why don't you tell everybody what the Ironman is? What is it?
what is
Three
it?
point eight
3.8
kilometers?
k swim,
Yep.
182 k ride, and a marathon, 42.2 k.
42 Ks. Yep.
But
Isn't that insane? In 1 day. Or
yeah,
what's the time?
I was
'Cause there's
like
a
a
time limit too.
yeah, like they it's usually 17 or 17 and a half hours, and
Wow.
my best time was just over 14. That's 1 year, but like the other two were close to like the end, like 16 and a half in the 16 hours. So it's a
Wow,
big day.
16
But it's
hours.
like I didn't do the proper training for it. I didn't build up my body properly for it.
Well,
And I planned on doing 10 years in a row and get like this plaque, 10-year plaque. That was my goal. And after they pulled me off the course in the fourth one I did,
yeah.
which, because they changed the course and they're like, oh no, you got to pick up your speed, which I did. But they're like 5 minutes later, no, you got to come off. Yeah, oh, how long did you take to do the first? I don't bloody know. What do you
Yeah.
ask me to do maths for? I've been out here on fucking day. It's like I'm just about to get the tailwind back into town, and you're telling me I can't ride. There's other riders, you know. So I was very upset, but
That was the fourth the, after
that
the
was
fourth
the
Iron Man.
yeah that was the universe telling me, stop doing this, you're fucking killing your body.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it was actually a good thing in the end, because then I was like, well, I don't have to do that, you know. I'm not, I've failed in getting the 10 years in a row, and I don't know, like, I'd still be, you know, doing it, but it's like my body wouldn't, yeah, I didn't do the proper training. I loved jiu-jitsu too much and decided to just stick to jiu-jitsu in the end. And there was a lot of political stuff because I was part of the committee at the local club and the coach and
the
also
club.
Yeah, also a sponsor. There was a lot of bullshit politics that were going on. That's like, yeah, I was just not having it. And then, like, when I said my farewell to the, I said like a big farewell message and the reasons why I left.
Mm-hmm.
And you know me, I'm usually fairly honest, and I just said the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had an issue, you know, me and the president, the new president that took over, we had an issue, and like, we were promised, as a sponsor, I was promised certain things and they didn't get delivered behind the, you know, behind the committee's back kind of thing. And it's like, so I just wrote out what happened. And,
mm-hmm.
and I said, oh, I'd just like to thank everyone and whatever. So they, and I warned them, like the people on the committee, I'm like, I'm going to, you know, put that message out. Within an hour of me posting that, they had edited my message, cut out the entire middle part, and just had the intro and the, all
right.
and the, thank you, and I hope to see you again, like the, you know, the bullshit part of,
yep.
yeah, the pleasantries. And they just left that, and I was like, I sent them an abusive email. It's like, you guys are,
all right, nice.
This isn't like China, man. Like, we're not in communist China here. What's going on? Like, you're suppressing my speech for, you know, what, because I said something. I wasn't rude. I didn't swear. I just said the truth. What, just because it was a slightly negative thing against a particular person. So, yeah, I was, so, yeah, didn't
so
leave
then,
all the terms.
So then after the triathlons and Phil had a chat to you, was that maybe a good time?
I was still doing triathlons then, but then I injured my elbow, and I think I was still doing triathlons, but because I'll go back to jiu-jitsu and then get injured, like, you know, I'll go back for a couple of weeks, then get injured and be off for a couple of months and go back, get injured.
Yeah.
And it's like, I didn't know how to protect my arm properly then.
Yeah.
Then when Phil opened up his gym, I knew that Pedro Sal was coming back, and I'm like, oh. So I just had to go back, and I was like, oh, you know, can I come and train? Yeah, I wasn't still a blue belt then. And like, he told me, oh, you know, you're not a blue belt at the moment, but you know, you can keep the blue belt on until you get back up to the rank. I was like, yeah, that's fair enough. That's cool. But I was doing a lot of one-handed stuff back then because I was protecting my arm. It was just my elbow then. So I was just like putting in my belt and just protect it that way. But then when I hurt the wrist, I couldn't do that anymore because people's weight on top of it was just too much.
Yeah.
So I had to come up with that other sort of protective system.
Yeah. So tell us, like, when did that? So you have an injury on your arm, right?
Mm-hmm.
When did that come about? What is it? When did it come about?
I think it was 2008, maybe.
Yeah.
It's been like 10 years.
And what is it?
It's rheumatoid arthritis. I had it in the elbow to start with. There was just a bit of pain, and I went straight to the doctors, straight to the osteo, and they didn't know what it was, and it took ages to find out. And I stayed within the medical system and, you know, did what I, you know, thought was best. But after being on the medications, and then I went to get some, what's that procedure? It's not the PRP, it's the other one.
Not sure.
They spin the blood. They take out your blood, they spin it and re-inject it.
Sounds like PRP, blood spinning.
Yeah, but they don't put anything else in it. It's just they get out the inflammatory.
Well, professors talk about blood therapy, like, which is like hemotherapy.
Hemotherapy.
Hemotherapy, yes, thank you.
Mm.
Yeah, where they just take out the blood and they put it in another part of your
They
body.
take it out of the vein and put it in the muscle.
Yep, okay.
But that, you can't get any information on it. I think it's like a suppressed knowledge thing. And I think the only, like, there's a lot of people, and it's controversial, that are doing it with their dogs or with their animals.
All right.
Now that's, but yeah, it's really hard to find information about it. The only good thing is that video with Dr., was it Luiz, whatever, that Brazilian dude
Oh yes,
talking about
yes.
it with
Professor
the,
sent me that.
yeah.
Yeah, that was a very interesting
But it's
video.
hard to, you can't get research on it. There's no,
Yep.
you
Well, so you were going through white belt with your injury. If when does 2008? How
Yeah,
does
I probably started to have it around then, but it wasn't. I was just a little bit sore. Like,
Yep.
it took probably took a couple of years to get in there
And okay.
and it really impinge it. There was
Nice.
like always like an I couldn't extend or retract it nearly from day one, but there wasn't that much pain, and
Okay.
then it sort of slowly got worse over time. I was managing it for a while, but then yeah, it's and then when I injured my wrist, and it just seems that every time I injure a part of my body, like the arthritis starts attacking it.
All right,
Yeah.
okay.
So, yeah, because if I roll my ankle, like, wearing thongs, not the American kind of thongs, the bloody Aussie thongs, the flip flops in Greece or in
Yeah,
Brazil.
you have to make that
Yeah,
distinction.
especially in Brazil. Walking on like cobbled roads in these countries, and it's like, yeah, I hurt myself just by from wearing thongs and walking too much in them,
All
sort of
right.
on those streets. So it's like I've learned my lesson. I'm
Yeah,
not gonna
man.
wear thongs anymore
Well,
unless
like.
it's like a shower or something.
Hey, well, like, as the professor says, there was this lesson, and he's been saying it regularly. And I understand what he's saying. Well, I think I understand what he's saying. And he. Well, I'll tell you what he says. It's like when you're in a lake, and you don't know whether it's really cold or really hot, or if there's something in there. He's like, you just jump straight in with both feet. He's like, you don't do that. He's like, you put your foot in. He's like, you put your weight on the foot on
Just a little
land,
toe.
and then you dip your little toe in there. You just feel it a little bit. And oh, that felt like crap. That didn't work. That got me in trouble. I won't do that again. You know, and I guess with you, same thing. You know, like if you, it sounds like what you're saying. Like, okay, I don't work when I'm on thongs and cobblestone street, like that didn't work for you. So you learn from that. So in jiu-jitsu, having to deal with this injury, and it sounds like a terrible injury, and I kind of I get where you're coming from in some cases too, because I have a similar thing, like, but mine isn't rheumatoid, it's just like osteo, where it's just been attacked from like an actual injury or
But you had
something.
your shoulder like pulled right out, like.
Yeah, that was just pulled right out. So it's, but it's, and it's arthritis, and it's, we're still dealing with things on a regular basis. So with that, with yours, how have you adapted what you do to be able to continue on this journey to, what are you now, purple three stripe?
Yeah, so I think so. Third
Yeah, man.
stripe purple.
Yeah, so what are some things that you've had to do different?
Well, the elbow, I always just put like a padded elbow brace, just so like just to protect it from getting knocked, and that was fine.
Yeah.
So whether I tied it up in my belt or not, I could still use my hand. I was still doing like chokes and stuff. I was getting good at the cross collar choke, and then Professor came and did a seminar, and then I like completely forgot everything and had to try to relearn. But then, like after a while, sort of after a while of doing that, my hand started hurting. So I had to. I first started with a piece of foam over my wrists and forearm
Yep.
and hand, the back of the hand, and like I just like strap it on with a boxing glove, like a boxing underwrap thing, and like tie that on. But still, it was like something missing. Like I'd wrap it up and protect it, but like I'd still like still hit the hand.
Yep.
Then I saw a video from Henry Gracie rolling with one of his students who was rolling with a dislocated finger and showed how he rolled and he grabbed the tennis ball and tied his hand up. And that addition of the tennis ball meant that I actually had structure in my hand
Yep.
and I could actually roll with structure without fear of it
Right
bending the
there.
wrong way.
Yes.
But because like if I just did a fist, it was like there was no strength in that for me. Like to
And that gets stuck in a lot of
and
places too.
yeah, so like holding a tennis ball wrapped up, so I've just got a stump.
Yep.
But I think for me, I think that was a big change with the tennis ball,
Yep.
because holding the tennis ball keeps my arm under tension,
Yep.
and I think that's helped with a lot of recovery, because it was much worse than it is now.
Yep.
But
So it's getting better.
it's getting better, but it's still there's no cartilage in the joint, so it's
Yep.
still like yeah, there's very restricted range of motion. You know, some days it's a bit of pain, but I've always had issues with blood flowing to my extremities, to my fingers and toes, so I've always got cold feet and cold hands, especially in the winter. So
And it gets so freaking cold here in Melbourne.
yeah, that's why I try to go away somewhere hot during the summer or
So
winter.
if you guys haven't seen Savo when he's training, he's got a tennis ball in his hand and he's got it wrapped up and there's like bandage on the wrist and then on the elbow and you got the bandage over the top of that, right?
Yeah, I've got an actual. It's actually a fiberglass, I think. Like a cast put around, so it's got like different layers of fiberglass. Like that's on the outside, but like with rubber stuff to make it a bit soft, and it's like strapped in. So I wrap that around my wrist and forearm to give it protection, so I can like hit it and not worry. Then I tennis ball and wrap up the whole thing. So it's pretty chunky, so I can't get away with small gis.
Yeah, that's why you're the
Yeah,
A2. Because
yeah.
I usually wear an A2. You're like way skinnier than me.
Yeah, well, I lost a lot of weight when I was under Maxwell, and I've kept it off, but I think I changed my opinion of food, more my emotional relationship with food. And so, after spending time with Maxwell and doing his diet and stuff, the weight came straight off, and it's basically stayed off since then.
Wow,
Lost like maybe 6 to 10 or maybe 8 kilos.
Explain to us what's the Maxwell diet?
Uh,
And he Max Steve, I've spent a lot of time with Steve. He doesn't
mm.
really say that he's got a Maxwell. There isn't
No, no, but the
Maxwell diet,
diet,
but
like he
what was
specifies
it
it
that he was
for
talking about?
he specifies it for each individual client, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's a mixture of the Gracie diet where food, with food combining and timing. But it's also got some ancient Ayurvedic principles or Chinese medicine principles with regards to constitution. So you eat the foods that your body type or your personality type or whatever
Yeah.
can handle, sort of thing. And that's why everyone's different. But I'm not sure if it's. But it seemed to work for me. Like I think with the fasting as well, and I pretty much just do the intermittent fasting at the moment, skip breakfast, and I think that's kept me as in a healthier spot than I would be if I was just eating regularly. So, but yeah, it's like based on that, and also on John Tilden's work.
Yeah, he's spoken to me
Yeah,
about that as well.
so it's like with
Toxemia Explained.
Toxemia
Is
Explained.
that the one?
Yeah.
I think it is.
Yeah. I bought that book. I bought like 4 copies of the book. So it's just like it's a free PDF, but I want to have a book to read in my hand. So it costs like $15 each or whatever to get a printed copy. So I bought like 4 copies. I've given away to probably 5 or 6 different people, and I still have 4 copies.
All right.
It's
How's that
the
work?
every single person I've given it to
Yeah.
has given it back to
All
me as
right.
if I was just lending it to them. And it's like, this is so fucking strange.
All right.
It's like,
Why is it strange?
It's written very weirdly, the book. But
Well,
like the
he's
people
a
I was giving
doctor.
it to are like they might be like within the medical profession, like people in my family or whatever,
Oh,
or they
yeah,
might
yeah.
be in, you know, I might like, yeah, gave to a few friends and people in my family, and every single person that I gave it to gave it back to me. You know, gave it to my father, gave it to a few other people, and it's like, yeah, so I still have all the copies I bought, and it's crazy. It's like,
Straight back.
that's.
No, well, there was a PDF, and I read the PDF, like read a little bit of the PDF, and it was enough. And it's very interesting what they say. So, you can be a gold digger. Hey, how about another thing the professor said today was the triangle. If you look at the Gracie triangle, his triangle, the high jiu-jitsu triangle, there's always like
Impaired
that
grappler
gap.
triangle.
Us right there, the impaired grappler triangle. There's always a gap up the top, and that's where the new knowledge can come in and out of. You know, so you can take something like, you know, Toxemia explained. You can take the Maxwell diet. You can take anybody's dietary recommendations, and you can pick and choose the one that works for you. And I think that's a really good way to do it because it sounds like you've done so much. You'll tell it. We've had many chats about this. All the different. You've been on like a few of the different diets, right?
Yeah, tried a few, but yeah, a lot of them are hard to stick to. Yeah, like especially like going out or, you know, like, and people just don't understand what you're doing. It's like, oh, I'm only eating this and this. I can't have any of this. Oh, okay, and then they just bring it to you anyway. You
Yeah.
know, being in a WOG family,
Yeah.
fucking, it's just like, I'm supposed to be on the, you know, and I've been like, even back when I was doing my triathlons, I was even seeing a dietitian, so it's like having all, you know, all healthy foods, but like eating 5 times a day, 3 meals and a snack, 2 snacks, and it's like, a lot of carbs, but it's, yeah, that wasn't sustainable.
You've done keto as well, haven't you? Were you doing keto last time I was here?
Not officially, but I probably
You've been wanting
am
to do it for how
ketogenic.
long?
Yeah, well, we're gonna start soon.
We're gonna start, huh?
Because I'm doing rehab for my hip at the moment. So I've got a labral tear in my hip, so I'm doing rehab for that. And I didn't
Okay.
want to change the diet. And you know, my exercise physiologist told me as well, not look, don't. I was gonna do the carnivore diet in October. He's like, look, wait till you bring your pain levels down in the morning to zero,
Yeah.
because they started. You know, they've gone. They're on track to get there, but I think it plateaus out towards the end. But I'm nearly there, but so it won't be scientific until after I get down to the sort of no pain in the morning kind of thing.
Well, that'd be interesting because okay, I've had the Michaela Peterson podcast episode downloaded in my phone for a long time and I haven't listened to it. So I got this little unofficial rule. If something's been in that feed for about a month and I haven't listened to it, I'm like, no, it's just out. It would never be listened to.
Yeah,
So I'd probably get rid of it.
we're all
But it
weird.
was interesting. Like what I did listen to about 30, 40 minutes of it, and it was very interesting. And her story is interesting. And it was like the degenerative disease that she was getting.
Autoimmune.
Autoimmune disorders, yeah.
Yeah.
And then she managed to. She says that she completely changed it with the carnivore diet, which is essentially just meat. Correct me if I'm wrong.
She has, I think, just meat and salt
Meat and
and
salt.
water, and I think mineral water. Like, but
Yeah.
with meat, she uses the lard from the cow as well.
Yeah. You know what? I really liked how she came to that conclusion because I mean her dad's a clinical psychologist and like she what she did was she eliminated certain things and she kept eliminating, was like, oh, and kept playing and kept experimenting with her diet and being like, oh,
Yeah, but she was getting nowhere.
I just ate chips again, fuck, and it all, sorry, and it all came
Yeah.
out, you know, and like my and you know all my symptoms came back. Okay, let me not try not to eat chips again and see
Yeah,
what
but she
happens
would get
there.
her symptoms a week later, or like a few days later. So she wouldn't be able to track it back to what she ate.
Yeah, but you know what? Sometimes that is the case. Like something won't affect you straight away. And usually that is the case. The food that we eat today won't affect us like right now. You'll be feeling it in a few days. But that's kind of
I think you could train your body.
Once you like train it up to have a healthy gut flora, I think you can train it to sort of just not like all that shitty junk food, the high fructose corn syrup. You know, you don't have a taste for it as much.
Yeah, well, you know what it is. I think it's habits.
Mm.
You know, and I think you have to build good habits. Professors have been talking about muscle memory.
Mm.
And I don't know, like muscles don't have, there's nerves, but there isn't like a brain in the muscles, but and your muscles work via your brain, but what, like there's habits of movement and habits of doing certain things in jiu-jitsu. You know, for example, like, you know, if you're always pushing, if you've learned how to do jiu-jitsu and just push against people, then, you know, that's a certain mechanic that's ingrained in your brain, and that's how you do things. You know, whereas, you know, if you are geared towards just framing, if you've learned how to frame, especially from the white belt, especially from day one, learning how to frame, but even like, you know, just the whole practice of understanding what a frame is relative to a hip escape, you know, the way you're going to get there is like playing and experimenting with it as well.
That's what saved me. That's the only reason I'm on my mats, today, because of Pedro Sauer's influence and like the lessons that he's taught. One day I just, like, a lesson just clicked. It's like, oh, that's how you defend yourself on the mount. Then for like months I was like almost impossible to tap in the mount, you know, even with one arm not being used. And it's like, that's because I learned to use my legs to defend.
There you go.
And
there you go.
Phil even told me he had to adjust his choke. He couldn't choke me. He had to make adjustments and figure out a way to be able to choke a person that's defending like that.
Exactly.
But all the ships go up together.
A rising tide lifts all boats.
That's it.
Wow, this professor, he's been teaching us just so many beautiful lessons.
Mm.
And the beautiful thing is that they apply in all of life.
Yes.
You know, and we're talking here about nutrition, and then like his lesson comes back into it again. You know, and we can talk about jiu-jitsu and on the mats and the techniques that we've been practicing, and then it all just comes back to the philosophy and the underlying ethos again of,
but it's just so of simple.
The martial art.
It's so simple. But
the martial art is representative of life, and that's what he says all the time. Also, he says, you know, the biggest benefit that you'll find from jiu-jitsu is the social aspects of it. You know, and the way you learn how to work with people and work with the environment and work with yourself is the biggest benefit to jiu-jitsu. Now, Sava.
Yes.
In Ahai Jiu-Jitsu, everything we do, we help everyday people build quality of life with Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. So tell me, how does jiu-jitsu
help your life? To say how good your gym is right now for an ad? No. Come on down to high jiu-jitsu.
No. Okay. I'm just so focused on the intention.
Mm.
And that's what we do. It's the quality of life.
Mm.
So how do you use jiu-jitsu, even with the impero, the arm, okay, with the ongoing injuries, with even the pressure at home, maybe sometimes, you know, like with pressure within yourself, like sometimes it's easier, I'm sure it's easier for you to stay at home and, you know, be on the couch and play, what's the game that Phil and Roger love right now, Red Dead Redemption.
Everyone loves that one.
Yeah, and the Space Odyssey game, that sounds amazing too.
Space Odyssey, no, Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Yes,
the ancient one. Greek.
That sounds great.
Fully rendered map of Athens. You can walk into
ancient cities. Like they've mapped it all out. That sounds incredible.
Mm.
Yo, so how does this stuff help you, Sava? Because why are we doing it at the end of the day? Why are we doing jiu-jitsu? Why are doing jiu-jitsu?
Look, I'm not... Yeah, I've never been one to be... to be scared of doing things. Like, I wanted to become a pilot when I was, you know, a teenager. And so I decided at 16, I better jump out of a plane, see if I can do it. So I went skydiving in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Because I planned on being a pilot. So I was like, I need to learn how to jump out of a plane before I become a pilot. Yeah. Because I'm like, I'm not going to fly a plane without being able to jump out if I need to. But
so that's always, one way to look at it.
Yeah, it's kind of always been my mentality. So like even when I'm getting beat up and undermount and stuff, like it's a, like I know it's a controlled environment, so I can, and I know, yeah, it's not, I just go into it. I don't, I'm not fearful of rolling. I never have been, like, sitting on the mount. I don't, like, you know, I don't freak out on the mount. If I freaked out on the mount, then I'll be like, I wouldn't last 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I never freaked out. So I always just sort of paused and just hold and mm-hmm. now try to connect as good as I can. And yep. try to just hinder them as much as I can from underneath.
Or defend, right?
And I'm always just defending, defending, defending. Until maybe after 5 minutes I'll get on top or I'll get an escape and they'll be tired and frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, like, but I tap all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I tap to young kids. I'll roll with someone and just have a fun play role. And I'll tap. I'll let them do stuff. They'll do, if they do it right, I'll let them do it. Yeah, I've passed out once or twice as well, but
I think we've all done that.
But yeah, like using it in everyday life, it's just like, yeah, it helps with depression, helps like with, you know, like the hormones and like, like just stress relief is just a major thing. Just like,
so how do you feel before you come to class?
It varies, like, because now, because of my, like, it's almost a chore at the moment, because I'm doing my rehab for my hip.
Mm-hmm.
So before class, either the morning or before class, I usually go before class, I got to go do a swimming session, like walking in the water. So I go to the warm pool and do a walking session.
Oh, right.
Backwards and all that sort of stuff. And,
oh, nice.
And, like, yeah, so I do that for the rehab to strengthen the hip. And then I come to jiu-jitsu and, like, I'll do kids' class first and then help out with the adults' class. But I've still got to find time, about 20 minutes, to stretch beforehand. I've got to mm-hmm. do a few glute activating stretches, to take pressure off the knee and things like that. So yep, I'm using too much of my quads, and so I'm sort of, it's almost a chore now, like having, like, there's a lot to do just to come to jiu-jitsu, but because I'm doing the kids class,
I treat
that as a job, and I treat my rehab as a job, almost. Like, it's almost like I've got 3 part-time jobs kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the podcast is almost kind of like a job, but I don't really spend that much time. I'll spend probably maybe 3 or 4 days per episode once I've got it recorded.
Yeah.
It takes a while to put together, but
3 or 4 days per episode.
Mm.
Wowee. Yeah, because you got all the video, you got all that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like bringing it into multi-camera angles and bringing the audio into it and editing the audio and then editing the photos to put in front. And
mm-hmm.
So it's just, but a lot of it's cut and paste.
Okay. So,
like just
so here, here's a question. Seems like a bit of a chore, right? Then when you come in, you start to stretch.
Look, I love rolling. Like I
and then you roll.
I roll.
And then you learn. Do you learn? So come like.
I technique. Learn by osmosis.
Osmosis.
But I'm, especially with the hip, I'm rolling super protectively.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you want to open my legs? They're open. You want to turn me this way? I'm turning. I'm not going to risk having my hips stretched apart or, you know, to make the injury further. I'll go on the mount.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let them take my back. I'll just defend and get better at defending. Until I can use my hip a bit better. I'll just got to do that. And, like, that started to make me think, like, getting into that sort of mind space of having an injury, but especially like the hip injuries, just, yeah, it's really annoying
because
mm-hmm. we need our hips so bad.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And like the whole leg's a bit screwy, but, yeah, it's,
Forgot my place now. But
All right. So then, here's a question.
Yeah.
How do you feel after class?
Oh, I love it.
What do you love
I feel
about
good.
It?
No, I just love rolling. Because like when I roll, I'm almost in a flow state most of the time.
Oh.
Because
what's
like.
A flow state?
Because I don't know if it is a flow state or it's just I'm just thinking that I'm in a flow grappling state, like
Oh.
just flow rolling.
What's flow? No, like,
just like don't it's like
explain
no
it.
resisting, it's like don't resist. The
Yeah,
guy's
man.
like, look, you know, you don't just be floppy,
Yeah.
but like if the person's doing something to you, let them do it and let them and just move. I have to move my body in a way so I don't get injured, I don't further hurt myself. So but then I find really weird avenues to get back on top or to, you know, escape sometimes.
Yep.
You know, and I
so
just go with it where I go with the feeling, and like basically half my body's in pain, so I go where there's no pain. So I just go.
Wow.
And a lot of the times
yep.
I go into trouble, but I just defend. And you know,
we go into trouble in some places.
Sometimes,
then do you,
yeah.
Yeah, but do you sometimes go into new open fields of safety?
Yeah, a lot of times.
And opportunity.
A lot of times I end up in a dominant position out of nowhere, just
remember
figuring out some weird.
Hey, we should tell everybody.
Like,
when I had a roll with Sava, I think it was KMA Liverpool a couple of years ago. Maybe last
yeah.
year. No, a couple of years ago for sure. And I was playing with Sava, and Sava just wrapped his legs around my head and like cracked my ear with his knees. And then I was defending, and he had this crazy powerful bite. And we did a triangle class today with Phil, so I know where you got that from. And it's a beautiful squeeze where you bring the heel to the hips. And you did that really well. And that was very nice. And then I came up, and I started pulling my head out. And I didn't frame properly. And Sava was relentless with the bite. And I pulled my head out. And I think that it was either the hit that you gave me with the knee or the pull and the scrape. And that was my... Sure, it was like my left
yeah.
ear, this little crazy annoying
yeah, yeah.
thing that I have in my ear right now.
It's hard to miss, bro. It's so massive.
I know, but do you remember how big it got? Because within
yeah,
seconds,
yeah.
it just
I was like
it just blew up.
I think I've still got.
I was like, oh no.
I think I've still got photos or video of Angela sucking
yeah,
it out.
Angela Gracie was
Angela
sucking
Gracie.
Out. Oh no! But you know what? If I'd gone, Professor kept telling me, Professor, everything that guy says is true. Like. He kept saying, he's like, John, he's like, needles don't work. He's like, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. He's like, you have to go to a doctor and they have to cut it. He told me to cut it. And I was like, I thought that was like a like old school Brazilian thing that they do. I was like, nah, man, we got needles now. But like, you know what it is, because that I went to Brazil this year for the camp. The very first training session, same ear, but on a different side, right on the inside
Jeez.
Of the lobe, on the inside, blew out. And, so what I had to do is I had to manage like this big fat ear for 10 days, and then I was really scared about the flight home. This was swollen and it was just so red and like just raw. So what I had to do is I had to like put a peg through it.
Yeah.
So it didn't blow up, but then the moment I took the peg out, it blew up again.
You gotta
luckily
keep that
I was
peg
in Sydney,
on.
But then I went to the doctor and he like cut it. And then luckily it's still like a little bit mangled, but it's okay, we'll live. Because we have injuries, Sava, and the injuries, we evolve and we adapt.
Yeah, but you heard when they asked Horry and Gracie about that. Why don't you have any cauliflower on your ears? He's like, oh, like all, you know, all these world champions, all these other guys.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, that's because I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Hey, man, I get that. I get that.
But it's a Professor Sauer,
I know.
Her Gracie
I get
lineage.
That. And at the same time, I don't.
No,
yours,
I felt bad.
No, yours was like I had that, but what I'm getting at with that is that you've developed like a really nice game for yourself according to what works for you and what doesn't.
But you did catch me at a peak time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Because like, that after I got my purple belt.
Yeah.
I felt like I was on adrenaline for like 6 months.
Hey, tell us, because, hey, I was witness to, we went to the Hicks and Gracie seminar. That was an epic day. you know what? I think it was my birthday too. I think it was my birthday.
Yeah.
It was Pedro Sauer in the morning at Templestowe. And yeah, then we drove with Galofo and Pedro Sauer in the car with Phil. That was such a mad ride. And then we got to Hicks and Gracie seminar, and you were there, Stephen was there, and everyone was there. And it was so awesome. And we saw Professor like go up to Hickson. I saw it, and I knew it was happening before you did. Explain it. What happened?
I didn't know what was happening. I thought Ty would get his black belt.
Ty.
Yeah, he's been a brown belt for like 10 years.
Oh, I always see that guy at Hickson seminars. Yeah. I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he used to train under Hickson. Like, he's from Traralgon.
Traralgon?
Yeah. But he's jiu-jitsu. He's a brown belt. But like, he's like a... His jiu-jitsu is like a third degree black belt. Yeah. Or black belt.
Oh, right.
But he's sort of...
Oh, so that's...
He doesn't... Yeah, he only wants to get... I don't know. Yeah. I thought he was getting the grading.
Okay, but then what did he say?
And then he's like, I jumped up to, like, because Hickson said, oh, you can film this part, like, to Phil.
All right.
Or to someone. And it's like, okay. I went to go grab my camera.
Yeah.
And Phil tells me, sit down, you malaka. I was like, oh, all right, I'm just going to grab my camera to film this for you, whatever. It's like, all right. He said, we can film it. I brought my gear there. Anyway, I sit back down and Hickson calls me up. What? He's like, oh, here to award a presentation to...
This is not something I usually do, you know, but my good friend Pedro over here.
He's like, I trust him. I trust your masters. And it's like, what?
And I'm glad to award you with the purple belt. Congratulations, my friend.
Yeah, that was a once in a lifetime.
Seen a ghost. Did this really happen to me? That was mad. That was epic.
Yeah, I didn't know what was happening.
That was very epic.
That was like the first time I ever got really ever got proper validation in my life for anything. And it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm not a phony grappler, because like you might have all these like negative thoughts, oh, you know, I'm doing this shit one handed, but you know, is it really phony or blah blah blah, or just, but it's jiu-jitsu is everything. It's developing your character, it's developing your body, your mind, everything.
So why do you keep doing jiu-jitsu?
Because if I didn't, I'd probably be bedridden.
So, and that's my point before too, because it seems like it's a chore to you sometimes, because it takes you a lot of time to prepare.
Oh, look, I don't mind the time. But
in saying that, yeah, you come out of it and it just it changes your life.
Yeah, but once I start rolling, it's like I just play, like Professor said, and like the more I play, the better I get, and the more fun I have. So I just play with everyone. And so because I've got the impairment, people don't want to smash me. Sometimes, you know, they'll go a bit harder, especially like the white belts. They don't want to get tapped by a one arm person.
Yeah.
But it's like, whatever. It's like, all right, I'll let you tap me. I don't care. Yeah. I'm not here like, you know, like you do have your ego, but it's like, screw that. Like I've never, you know, tapping has never been an issue for me. It's not like, oh, you know. But the thing I was going to say before, like I forgot, but yeah, was I had a hypothesis that Hicks and Gracie won't get any operations to fix his body, because he feels that in having his natural body, he has more of a connection to jiu-jitsu, and his jiu-jitsu is actually getting better because he needs to protect his body. And like, you know, even though his body is pretty far gone, he's got to warm up for ages before seminars and stuff, but I think that, you know, that could be a reason why he's reluctant, because his jiu-jitsu is getting better. And like you saw him the first year he came, and then the second year, like your birthday, like when I got my belt,
and we went for dinner afterwards,
dinner afterwards,
awesome. We hung out, just chilling,
hung out with Hickson, and then
Hickson and
then the next year we went to the seminar. And then I interviewed him in Sydney and came up to Sydney.
Oh, that's when you came in.
Yeah. That was sort of a hypothesis I had, because like I feel my jiu-jitsu got better
Yes.
after my injury,
Wow.
or after my hip injury. Like for a little while, I was like squeezing, like I was made sure I was protecting it, not letting the hip open, so I had, a little bit more of a squeeze.
I feel you,
But
Saba.
yeah, but like for 6 months, I was like on adrenaline after.
Man, hey, and here's the beautiful thing, the impaired grappler, what that represents. And you know what? And I love this because what you got to do, and this is the most beautiful thing, is that you have to adapt according to what's here and what's right now. And right now, of course, you want to have two arms. I, of course, want to have two super healthy shoulders that I don't have to worry about. Imagine, see some people that just awesome shoulders. It's like, fuck, guy's got two mad shoulders. It's mad. Lucky that guy. You know what I mean? It's like, that guy's not in pain. You know, you see those things, and you always think about, what could have been. You know, fuck. Imagine I didn't have a sore shoulder like this. I always think like that. I'm like, fuck. Imagine I didn't go to the competition and I didn't tear my shoulder off. You know, and imagine, you didn't develop, your arthritis. Would you have everything you have? Would I have everything I have? And I think the answer right there is no. I think we see that in Hickson, which is what you're trying to say, that, his jiu-jitsu needs to get better because he doesn't have that physicality anymore. You see that with Pedro. And Pedro, man, Phil was telling me a story about Professor. I see Professor because I deal with that shoulder pain too. You know, and I see what I can do and can't do, and I see exactly him too, and I see the pain that he goes through.
Yeah, you
I
see him always rubbing it and stuff.
always rubbing it. And look, I've had, I don't know, but like he's had five surgeries on one side, three surgeries on one side, a bummy knee he's got, and like sounds like a crazy story, and that guy deals through so much, goes through so much pain the way I do, the way you do. But the thing is that he's adapted his game to suit. You know what I
He's
mean?
got
And
him
that's
better.
the, there's always a constant then. And jiu-jitsu is a constant, but bigger than that, the evolution is the constant. And that's, I think, a big thing that jiu-jitsu can give to us. You're always needing to improve. Like, when are you ever saying, like, I don't need to improve anymore. I'm okay. I'm kind of totally good where you are. We're always looking for details. We're always trying to make things better, easier, more efficient, more effective. Professor's so big with that, like with his car, everything that he
The
does,
jack.
the jack, yeah, he's always like, you just gotta get the jack and you gotta do things with quality, and that's why he was saying with me, like, showing your cards, you don't want to show your cards all the time, just fucking cards everywhere, card, 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 there's quantity, no quality.
Yeah, I can show
Well,
him
the
this move, this
quality,
move, this move that I'm going to get him with.
yeah, well, exactly, but and so what Professor's done is he's created a kind of jiu-jitsu that's based solely on leverage because he hasn't had anything else.
And protect your joints.
And that's why his legs are so effective because he hasn't had arms. Like, he can't lift his elbows up, and you get that, you see that. But it's allowed his jiu-jitsu to flourish because now he uses his legs and now he has to understand how to connect to the ground, and he's taught like an entire association. That's what I saw with Barack today. We're at Barack's seminar, and we saw a whole academy of Baracks. And I'm sure they're from Nexus as well, but even Nexus and Templestowe, and Phil's Academy and us in Sydney, and all the Pedro Sauer schools around the world are all preaching like what the things that Professor's preaching, and that's just play jiu-jitsu, good mechanics, because eventually we're gonna have, not gonna have any of that. And I
That's
feel like
right.
me and you and everyone that's injured and still continues to evolve, I think we have the ability and we have the necessity of evolution. We must evolve because there's no other way. And
Yeah,
I think
it
that's the
gotta
benefit,
adapt.
and that's what we're reminded of constantly at the gym. Like, I remember this, so like three, I'd say about a month ago, I was rolling with Nick Avery. Nick Avery, you're a legend. Nick Avery helped my ear throughout Brazil. I wouldn't have had an ear if it wasn't for Nick Avery. But also, he had me on the mount, and it was a he's getting very slick. And I had my hands on him yesterday. We learned the escape. Nick Avery, I'm gonna show you that escape.
You're gonna do it to him.
I'm gonna
That's
do
how
it
you're
to
gonna
you.
show him.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'm gonna explain to you how. But what I did was I had both my hands at his hips, and then I was supposed to frame, but what I did was I pushed. And I pushed, and all of that push just came right into my shoulder joint, and I felt it. I was like, oh no, I just heard like, now like there's just weird sounds going on in there now. It's like clink, clank, it's just crunchy, just gross. And it's like, ugh, and then it was sore for days. But what that showed me, Sava, was that, hey, we don't push. And that's why it's okay that you don't have an arm. It's like, because you got two legs that you can use, you got a head that you can use.
Yeah, I love my triangles.
Body that you can use. You know what I mean? You got two femurs that you can use. You can use so many other things and so many other tools.
Yeah.
And that's the beautiful thing. You know, we always have to evolve.
Yeah, 80% of my body can be used to choke you or something.
Yep, exactly. Yes. And you're always looking, okay, how can I stay safe? And how can I choke you?
You have to. I couldn't stay on the mats if
how can I get you to say uncle?
Yeah, look, I'm always wanting to, like, I'm always, like, trying to, you know, I'm not just flow rolling, just, like, laying back and go. I'm trying to, you know, defend myself and get a dominant position. I'm trying.
But this is another part. Listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes we say flow rolling, and I'll say it too. I think flow rolling has a place for sure. But this is what I would say to my academy, to my students. It'd be like, we also have to learn how to take things when, you know, set things up and take them and take the neck, you know, and choke people when you want to.
Yeah.
Because this is always about submission. Like, as in, you want to stay safe, and then eventually you want to go and you want to get the submission. You want to finish it. In your case, maybe flow rolling is better for you, you know, because it works for you right now. You know, and it's a different circumstance.
Yeah.
So for us to always say flow rolling isn't good, I think that fails to account, because if it wasn't for flow rolling, you probably wouldn't be able to train.
No.
If people were coming in and trying to take your arm off, you would not be able to train.
Mm.
You're lucky. You're lucky you have a whole school of just awesome people in here that are happy to contribute and collaborate with you and have a conversation with you. You know, rather than trying to beat you down and hurt you. And that's something that...
Well, I have people protecting me. And I've sort of realized lately, throughout my whole life, I've always had people protecting me. But yeah, it's... You know, it feels like... Yeah, I'll be like... I'll be wanting to start standing against some monster. Feels like, no, start on the... I'm like, all right, whatever. You know? So it's like...
Yeah,
okay. Like, he protects me from myself as well, so it's like, you know...
Yeah, but people are around you to help you as well, and that's okay. Like, I think we're not superheroes as much as we try to be, and I think it's nice to accept help from people, and sometimes, hey man, that's what Phil's helped me with. Phil's helped me, because for a very long time, there wasn't a super prominent jiu-jitsu coach that I had. And now, like, with Phil, we have just a jiu-jitsu coach, and it's like, like, so awesome, you know, because I'm a coach myself, and I teach jiu-jitsu, and I share jiu-jitsu, you know, and at the same time, I'm also learning from this person.
Yeah, and he's, you know, and you're spending a lot of time with you guys as well, and it's
you're going to your exercise physiologist, because that guy knows more than what you do.
Yeah.
And you go to a nutrition coach, because, you know, they can help you in ways that you can't really help yourself. And I think that's important, you know. Yeah. I think we always, and this is something for me to say, for me to heed my own advice, but I think it's important that we always look for help, you know. And some people people are there to protect us, like, you know, but it's not like we can survive, if necessary, unprotected and in this crazy wilderness, but it also doesn't have to be like that, you know.
My problem is I don't always ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like I shouldn't need to ask for help a lot of the time. Yeah. But it'll be good to have some help here and there.
Yep. Well, that's what we're here for. That's what everyone's here for around you. My phone's about to die. And we've got 5 minutes to go. So, Sava, thanks so much for doing this podcast.
No worries.
It
was a pleasure.
So tell us, where can we find more about the Impero and the journey of the Impero?
Oh no, I haven't prepared for this.
No, just go.
Just look for Impero Grappler.
Impero anyway, Grappler.
I think Twitter's at Impero Grappler with an A at the end. Grappler. Because it wouldn't fit in the proper text.
Just put Impero.
But
But just, yeah, theimpairedgrappler.com is a website, and
awesome.
Instagram and stuff, all the socials.
Come on, man, you gotta say like, subscribe, share. You got that down pat on your YouTube.
Like, subscribe, and share.
On your YouTube videos.
Yeah, all that jazz.
Hey, it's just been, no, honestly, like, it's been awesome to share the story because, as we've just heard, like, it's a beautiful story that you have, and keep at it, man. Like, it's so awesome to see. And I mean, persistence, it's not a matter of, like, keeping at it and being persistent at something that isn't working for you. It's keep at it and keep evolving to find things that work for you. You know, and if you, hopefully, we can
both. Well, it might have started as persistence, but it's ended in.
Well, it has to be. Yeah. It has to be, because persistence eventually doesn't work. Eventually, you just. There's a better way. There's always a better way. You know, and that's what Professor showed us this week. It's been awesome to be in Melbourne. So, thank you. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Us from the Imperio and me.